Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
If you have questions about this segment or any others and want to email us, it's foremanwolf at wypr.org. That's just one dot.
So we were talking about cooking fish.
Yeah, you told people about cooking a trout correctly. Let's talk about salmon or rockfish or, you know, it's funny. You always tease me about wanting to cook things at high heat. But something like a piece of salmon where maybe you don't want to cook it through.
You do want to cook it at high heat.
And yeah. It's also got good natural fat to it.
Exactly. Salmon does this wonderful thing when you cook it at high heat and oil and good oil is it gets nice and crispy. It's almost as if you feel like you put flour on there, but you didn't. It's pretty cool. And salmon, if it's a beautiful piece of fish, nice and fresh, I cannot encourage you enough to cook that rare, medium rare, or at least medium, because it's just, and the feeling in your mouth, the difference in texture when that salmon is really basically raw in the center.
Crisp on the outside and not even quite warm on the center.
It's so good.
It's remarkable.
I do not like to eat salmon well done. It just seems a shame. And it does have all that fat. Well, and I also make salmon tartare. So I almost prefer to eat fish raw than I do cooked because fish is absolutely, I mean, it's just one of the best things in the world to eat fish raw.
Salmon, when it is
good quality.
Super quality and it's fresh, I always want it with the skin on. And I always go into the pan, the same technique as the trout, but usually a heavier pan. I mean, a big copper pan or something like that at home or the black steel or something that can actually take a little bit higher heat. And I always go in with the skin first to the oil to release some of that flavor into the oil so that eventually when the salmon is finishing up, I'll cook it hard on that side with the skin to get the skin really crispy and then turn it. And if the salmon has been... Hopefully it's not a skinny fillet. Hopefully it's kind of something that's fat so you can get that underdone center that you want. I always put a bunch of black pepper on the skin, and it ends up being super crunchy and almost like its own little seasoning or sort of salmon bacon on the top of the fish because it continues to sort of dry as the other sides of the fish because I always cook all four sides of the fish. And
I sear all four sides. Okay, I do not do that.
And
actually, I like the sides to not be seared. I want them to be their texture. If it's a thick piece,
So you want the sides tender on the fish?
Yeah, I do want them tender. I've stopped one of my cooks the other night from searing a piece. We had rockfish that was very fat fillet. It was gorgeous. So we had wider pieces, and he was trying to cook it on the flesh side, and I'm like, don't do that.
Yeah, it's so funny that this.
I do like a crispy skin, but
salmon I feel differently about than I do rockfish because of the fat content of the fish.
Okay.
And I also will throw a little bit of cold butter in the pan and baste it with that melting for a couple of seconds while it's cooking. But that's...
Well, and talking about fish, you know, I agree with you on how to, with the rockfish, I sear that first on the skin side in that steel pan in a nice amount. You know, when we say a nice amount of fat, it's just enough to coat the bottom of the pan. You're not swimming in fat, but there has to be enough to get you through the cooking process. Your pan will begin to dry up as you may have to add a tiny, if you have a big fillet. You know, our portions at Charleston are tasting portions, so our fish sizes are smaller.
But at home, you may want a seven-ounce piece of fish.
Exactly. We're cooking small pieces. You're going to cook a seven-ounce piece, and that has a much different cook time. And you're going to go into the oven with a seven-ounce piece of fish to finish, especially a piece of rockfish, something that's a big fillet.
Well, rockfish is something usually you want it medium well.
That's the difference between something like salmon and rockfish. I cook rockfish all the way through and accept that it's moist. So probably medium well is truly the right temperature. Medium would be still a little bit translucent in the center. And I don't know what, it's just not desirable.
Medium well
fish.
Is still really tender, but just done in the center of most fish of that type, whether it's snapper, grouper, rockfish.
Right. Those white fish like that.
Bronzino, orata, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we recently started cooking dorade, and oh my gosh. I mean, of course, all the other restaurants have used it for years, but I started recently cooking it, and we're having so much fun with it. It's just such a great...
The skin is so good.
Oh my goodness. When I saw a plate come back the other day that had the skin off to the side, and
the reason people often don't eat fish skin is because it's not cooked well.
Right.
You know, that's to me the highlight of that piece of salmon that I always want to do at home is that crunchy peppered skin that has like big deep flavors, and then the rest of the salmon is so like tender and a little crispy and melty and
And also the other thing with fish is you have to keep it moist. So if you are going into the oven with, let's just say it's an 8-ounce piece of rockfish, I strongly suggest, even though you just cooked it in corn oil or some sort of neutral oil, that you go into the oven with a little bit of whole butter and a little bit of lemon juice and reseason with salt. You said pepper on your salmon. I completely understand that, but I rarely put pepper on a piece of fish.
Yeah, that's the only fish I can think of that I would do that with, and it's because of the skin of the salmon. It's a particular thing that I love.
There's another way to cook a milder, kind of sweet fish, let's say turbot.
Super delicate.
Oh, I love turbo. Turbo, when we pan sear that, which we do, when it comes into the window, it smells like buttered popcorn. Every time it goes past me, it makes me want to eat it. It's just such a great fish. One of the ways that the French became famous for cooking their fish is to completely cover it in thin slices of potato. And I did that with turbo one time when I came back from France. And what it does is it creates a moist environment for the fish to cook in. And you can get an Asian mandolin or any type of mandolin, thinly sliced, big Yukon Gold.
Yeah, the potatoes steam out as the fish cooks.
So what you do is you do these, not paper thin, but almost paper thin slices of potato. You have to do this right before you're making it. Before you're eating it. And you salt the fish first, lightly, and then you put the potatoes on. You completely wrap the fish in potato. And of course, they also look like scales when they come out of the pan, so that's kind of a cool side effect. And you salt the potatoes. And in this case, I would pepper because potatoes love pepper.
Yeah.
So you salt and pepper the potatoes. Now you're definitely going into a hot pan. And when I say a hot pan, I don't mean on fire, smoking, your smoke alarm's about to go off. I mean a hot pan where when you put that fish in the pan, you can immediately move the fish in the pan. If it sticks, you are in trouble. Oil, hot pan, and wrapped fish goes into the pan. I would do a smaller fillet with this. I would not put an 8-ounce piece of thick rockfish in there. I would do a thin fish like the turbo, right? And you can finish it in the oven. So you brown it on one side, flip it over, start to brown it on the second side, and then into the oven at 375 degrees, no convection, and you're a couple minutes in there and it's out. Oh my goodness, you're just going to be amazed at. That's a beautiful thing. Beautiful fish prep.
So let's, because I know we can talk about cooking fish for a long time. I think it's the number one thing that people struggle with at home. Other things I know they're often afraid of are frying things. Everyone's afraid of, it's funny.
Well,
the fish
dangerous.
Thing is it's always going to smell like my house.
Yeah.
Right. The fryer thing, well, one, it's maybe dangerous, and two, they worry about the fat.
Right.
So when frying, we're talking about not just pan frying, but deep frying, what does it actually do?
Well, you know, people often will say, I know when I moved here to Baltimore, people would say, oh, you're not going to fry my crab cake. And I don't know where I came from. I'd never heard of that. I always saute a crab cake in a tiny bit of oil, just like we're talking about cooking the fish, and then I finish them in the oven. So, you know, I think with frying food, the issues are, well, the good aspect of frying food is that it really doesn't have to absorb a lot of fat. It's all in your bread.
If you do it in the right temperature.
Yeah, it's the right temperature, having fresh oil. And, you know, that's what restaurants have to, you know, restaurants really need to think about the temperature, the age of their oil. You know, we change our oil all the time, and because we do a lot of volume in there. And when you're at home, that's the thing. You have to use fresh oil. At home, I would never reuse fryer oil. I would always have fresh. And, you know, your other question is, how do I dispose of this? And I think that's part of the problem, kind of because you do need a decent amount of oil to deep fry in. And I let mine cool down in the pot on the stove, and then I strain it through a funnel back into the original containers, and then I put it in a plastic bag and throw it away.
And then you can discard it.
Exactly. Yeah. So now that we've solved that, you need a very good pot. It can't be aluminum. It needs to be stainless steel, and it needs to be a heavy-bottomed pot. You need
some of the big... They're almost like the big Creuset chicken roasting pots, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
are pretty good.
Those would be great.
Chicken frying pots. Yeah,
those are really heavy duty, very thick.
Because that's iron in the center, ceramic on the outside, so it's easier to clean, but you get that heavy pan effect.
Right. So that or stainless steel, and obviously you need to leave enough. The pot needs to be big enough that when you do put the food product in, the displacement of the oil is at a safe level. So you're probably a little less than 70%, maybe 70% this level of oil in that pot. You need a thermometer. You need to know that you're at 350 degrees with that fryer oil temperature. And that stove needs to stay consistently at that temperature. And, you know, let's say you fry oysters. I fry my oysters about 45 seconds. So, you know, that's going to be a quick and easy. And, you know, you just want to keep that oil clean, because now you're cooking something that's little that you're going to do a lot of. You may have to do in batches. And so once you take those, you should always have a pan with paper towels in it to put your fried product in so it can drain out of the fryer. And just clean that. Use some sort of a skimmer or a strainer to clean that fat in between batches of frying. And then
so it doesn't accumulate all kind of overcooked business in the oil and ruin the flavor of the oil.
Right.
That's the trick, is you want every batch to be like your first batch.
Right, and you also don't want to eat those little pieces, because they're just going to get really dark and gross.
Yeah.
So
gross is bad.
Gross is very bad. So there you go. That's how you fry, basically. So if you're going to do,
When you season things, because like we talked about, when you cook, you season something ahead of time. You may season it during cooking. You may season it after cooking when you slice it or whatever it might be. When you fry, it's a finished product when it comes out. So when you season, let's say, whether it's, let's say you want to make vegetable beignets, it's zucchini and peppers that you want to fry, and you made a beignet batter,
mm-hmm.
you better season that beignet batter well.
Absolutely.
Because that's your one shot.
Right. I mean, we do sometimes season food when it comes out of the fryer, but it's not, the food itself isn't going to be seasoned. It's the breading.
Yeah, the breading is what gets the salt the second time.
Right. When we do fry green tomatoes, we do not pre-season them, because we have to have them prepared. So because they're going to sit on a sheet pan ahead of time, if the tomato sat with salt in it, they would just weep their natural high water content. So again, if you're doing that at home and you want to pre-bread your green tomatoes, you're going to have to leave the salt out and do it on after it comes out of the fryer. But everything else, you would, any normal breading procedure, you would always season your breading procedure. And if you're making beignets, another cool thing about beignets is if you're working with seafood, so you're doing shrimp beignets, we put a little bit of lemon zest in our beignet batter, which really perfumes it. And I do actually, I make turbot in a beignet batter, and we always put lemon zest in there, and that's very pretty batter.
The lemon oil releases into it.
It's really beautiful. Yeah.
So the thing that everyone thinks that they can cook that mostly I think that they can't is chicken. Because no one's scared of cooking chicken.
Right.
And usually people do a lot of masking of whatever it is that they've cooked when they cook chicken. Right? But a lot of times the chicken itself is not being cooked nicely. I'm not trying to be critical of the world.
Right.
I'm trying to help you help them.
Right. All right.
I want to help you help them.
I'm going to help you. Right now. I'm going to help them.
So
biggest thing is chicken has no fat in it. If you take that skin off.
Right. Then that's the
how most people buy it, I think. And no bone. If you take the bones away and the skin away, just ended up with a lean piece of meat.
I'm not talking about roasting a chicken, because I don't think that many people want to do that at home.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly,
that's a loving, dedicated process.
We could do an entire program to like roasting a chicken properly. We're not going to do that today.
Right. No, we're going to
You talk about chicken breasts, and I'll talk about chicken thighs.
Okay. Chicken breast, boneless, skinless.
Almost zero possibility of having flavor, right?
Right. So.
So what do you do?
Well, I like Tabasco. So I have to admit that if I cook chicken breast at home, I'm going to marinate it in Tabasco, lemon juice, and a little bit of oil and salt and pepper.
And, for how long? Or just for a little bit?
Maybe like 5 minutes. And then I saute it at high heat. And there's two ways I'll cook a chicken breast. I'll do that because I do like Tabasco and hot sauce so much. The other way is that I will marinate it in fresh rosemary, kosher salt, pepper, and extra virgin olive oil. And then I'll get my pan hot, or I'll grill it. And the biggest thing with chicken is that you can't overcook it. And people cook it too hard and too long, and it's just, that's the end of the chicken.
No, but the world is terrified of the whole, like, pink in the middle of the chicken breast.
They just need to not be terrified of that. And, you know, let's say, I don't know.
But you got to sear it to get some kind of decent caramelization in the pan.
Right.
You don't have much shot to get that much flavor.
That's what makes it taste good, is if it's golden brown on both sides, you've seasoned it properly. Even if you just want to do oil, salt, and pepper, there's nothing wrong with cooking a chicken breast that way. You don't actually have to do anything else to it. You just have to season it at least that way, and cook it properly. So as you say, you brown it on both sides. Again, you're in a pan that's hot, that has good oil in it, and neutral oil, and you finish it in the oven. And you're just going to have to learn to feel it. You know, the one end of the breast is much thicker than the other end. So I do sometimes slit that just a tiny bit, just open it up a little bit, just so that it cooks a little bit more evenly than the other end of the chicken breast. But yeah, just cook it at 350, or bake it, pardon me, at 350 degrees. And
once you've seared it, to let it finish cooking
right,
through.
Right, you have to sear it first. That's color. Again, it's color and flavor. That's what makes food desirable, is that sear a lot of times. So
The chicken thigh is the opposite thing. That,
a lot of
flavor. It's also a lot less money, usually. Mm-hmm. It is a lot of flavor.
No, it's a great way to feed a lot of people.
So I realized this when we were doing tryouts of different things for restaurant menus some years ago. I took a steel black pan and got it good and hot, and I'd taken a chicken leg and squirted a little bit on the fat, on the skin, and dusted it with blackening spices and seared that thigh in a dry pan, and all the fat immediately came out of that thigh.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I mean, and just kind of, just kind
nice
of,
pockets
and there's
of
good,
fat.
Good pockets of fat
yeah,
in that
that's
thigh.
The difference between the breast and the...
But my goal was to try to cook that thigh in its own fat, if I could possibly do that,
that's
instead
a good
of oil.
Goal.
And yeah, and, but there was enough fat, this was, you know, there was enough like skin that was there, and I rolled it around enough in the pan to get it all crispy on the outside and cook it in its own fat, turned it over on the side that was more of the flesh side, and let that finish in the oven like that, pulled it out a couple of times, basted it in its fat, you know. Recrisped the skin on the stovetop for a minute before it was finished, rested it, because like any other flesh, it needs to rest or it's going to be tough. And the result was tremendous. It was probably 50 cents worth of chicken thigh.
Yeah, that's good.
But well, it didn't need the blackening spice. That was part of what we were trying to figure out. But you can render all that fat out of there if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to. Most everything we're talking about, it really just has to do with paying attention to the details of actually getting something cooked.
Right. You have to have an interest in it. You have to want it to be the best it can be. And you have to buy a fresh piece of chicken. You know, that's the next thing. You really, well, that's
quality.
How you start. You start with the best piece that you can afford to buy. And, you know, getting back to the chicken breast, if you do leave it on the bone and you do leave it the skin on it, you're going to have a much better thing to eat.
Well, yeah.
So,
no question. Well, we're moving on from chicken when we come back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine.